The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to The Exchange. Apologies for the slight lateness in it. We've had a bit of a technical issue in terms of Zoom, so that's been my fault. But we've got now Cockney Rebel Richard Crowe with us, the expert stock picker and accomplished investor. So welcome, Richard.
Welcome. Morning, Paul. I think I'm the technical problem, probably. Everything I touch turns to... You know, the opposite Midas touch when it comes to tech.
You're like me. Anyway, we've got lots of important macro data coming up, not least today's US payroll in the report in the afternoon at 1:30. But before we sort of run through the detail and what you've how you fared in the first quarter, would you could remind investors of what what kind of stocks you like and how you go about selecting them?
Yeah, sure. Well, I've done this for a living now for 25 years. And I found my own sort of method of finding, I like recovery stocks. So, you know, I found my own method of finding these stocks. And then I found my own method of, you know, sorting out the ones which are good and which aren't. And what gives me the indicators to buy and when. So I try to play for recovery plays, but I do trade a bit. If there's something a bit moving on momentum, I might nip in the day and buy something that's got a bit of a nip out after and make a bit of pocket money on the side. But aside from that, yeah, really, I like recovery plays if I can find them, because you're buying something that's really beat up and, you know, where everybody's given up. So, and contrarian plays, when everybody's enthusiastic, it's probably time to get out. And when everybody's, you know, sold up and gone and don't want anything to do with it, that's when I'm looking. So,
yeah, I mean, I think that, yeah, it's quite interesting, actually, because I've spoken to a lot of sort of like, you know, established fund managers, and they tend to go for the sort of the pristine balance sheets, the companies that have got really high recurring revenues and return on capital employed. But they tend to be priced to perfection. And therefore, you have to sort of like, as Warren Buffett says, invest when there's blood in the streets to get real alpha, haven't you, I guess?
Yeah, because... You know, if you're looking at recovery plays, 9 times out of 10, the balance sheet isn't going to look very good. That's why it's a recovery play. You know, so a lot of them are absolutely beat up. Some have got sort of hidden assets, which are great, you know, that covers the downside a bit. And it, hopefully investors haven't noticed those, you know, hidden assets that are there. You know, it might be saying on the balance sheet it's not been valued for 10 years, revalued for a long time. So there might be some stuff there. But basically, you know, I tend to... I'll read the balance sheet, see what the cash flow is like, and very few of the things I get involved in, when I've got involved in them, have ever gone bust. Mm. I might have taken a little bit of a hit on some of them sometimes, but that's all part and parcel of the game. You know, for every one that you might lose, you know, maybe a 30-40%, there's going to be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 baggers out there, which more than cover those. And as long as you're finding plenty of those, and you're finding a lot less ones that go badly on you, and they only go badly in a small way, then that's the way to make money. Well, for me, it's the way to make money. So,
yeah. And how's it fared? Yeah. How's it fared in Q1 so far?
Well, it's first January was the disaster. You know, January hardly started. From October to December, from the low in October to December, I was up 40%, and most of that was mainly Rolls Royce and Marks and Spencers, which I was about 45% of my portfolio. So they were just cracking. You could just sit there and play, and each day you're up, and that was great. So I always remember someone saying to me once you're up 40%, you've only got to make another 40% where you are, and you're up 100%. It's stuck in my head, because that 40% has increased the capital you're playing with. And so by the time you make 40% on a bigger pot, from where you started, you're up 100% from, you know, so like I would be up by next October, if I could make 40% this year up to October, on top of the 40% from October to January, I'm up 100% from October. So it got to that point. I got to 40% at the end of the year, and I thought, that rang in my head, and I thought, well, if I can do another 40% this year up to October, double the portfolio in a year, that would be really marvellous. So I was upbeat, the market was going great. And in January, it was just awful. The market was lousy. My first stop that came out, I got Watches of Switzerland, and they bigged themselves up and said they were doing better than expected, confident that. And so, you know, I'd watched the chart, nice little bowl on it, I'd already bought it, going great. And then they come out and said, oh, it's all changed, everything's awful, you know, it was just a complete about turn, and the shares dropped, well, it hit me for 3% of the whole portfolio. So that didn't get January off to a good start. And then February weren't that good, because in the beginning of February, I think it was Halfords. Chart looked like it was doing a bowl there, and I lost nearly 1%, you know, going at that one, thinking that was a bounce. So by the end of February, I think I was only up, 1% after taking those two hits of 4% and made 5% elsewhere. I was up 1% by the end of February, which was never going to get me to where I was hoping to get. But March has been fantastic. You know, that has been with Rolls Royce and Marks and Spencer's putting in a bit of a bounce, Rolls Royce carrying on. And
are you out of Rolls Royce now? Are you still in there?
No, I'm in there. I'm in both of them again. I trim both of them when I trim Marks and Spencer's. I've timed that one better. I trimmed Marks and Spencer's to about over half, took over half my money out there at the top. And that was pretty much sort of like about 4% from the top. And then I bought them back right on where they bought them. So by about 1% or 2%. So the 20% fall, I was out of 15% of that, really. So, and now I bought back in. And I think I've killed out.
Winners and losers. Top stars falls again. Golf Marine rises.
That's all right, no problem.
Oh dear.
That was obviously somebody telling you to buy or sell, was it?
No, I've got on SharePage you can have AI.
Okay.
As the news comes across, it just reads the news out to you. Yeah. So I don't know what I've done to shut that up at the moment. It's making me panic because I can't shut it up. So let me just turn that off.
That's all right.
Yeah,
it's good. Yeah. So in terms of I've got the Marks and Spencer chart up there. Can you see that one, Richard?
Yeah, sure.
So you what's the sort of percentage of your portfolio you've still got in Marks and Spencer, having sort of sold half?
Back up to where I were, it's let me think. What am I? I'm about 17% Marks and Spencer's.
Wow, good. So let's move to that one, because obviously it's come out with a very good Christmas trading update. In fact, what surprises me is that actually 2/3 of the business is food now, isn't it? It's only a third which is actually clothing, which was its sort of bread, you know, which is bread and butter, I suppose, traditionally. And it seems to be growing pretty faster in the food. And I guess the key question now is that, having had such a good bounce and done so well, have we got longevity in the consumer to carry on buying, in terms of particularly the sort of like the more premium food, and also, you know, sort of like, you know, nice clothes, quality clothes?
Well, there's, you know, for Marks and Spencer's, they're revamping another 100 stores over the next 2 years still. So probably less than 2 years now, about 18 months. And each store that they revamp, they lose 30%. Footfall on average, they lose 30% footfall, but they gain 30% sales. So, and they've got another nearly 100 stores to do that too. So, there's a lot of self help there on top of what the normal retail would be for most people, which is great. And they're the best performing food retailer at the moment. Them and Ocado were marked up as the best performing food retailers. And I think Marks and Spencer's is, well, Ocado's up there because they're doing Marks and Spencer's food. So I think it's the boost from Marks and Spencer's that's getting Ocado up there.
Yeah.
So that all sounded, rather good to me. And they've just got rid of Kate Bickerstaff. She's just going, and they've brought someone in place. She was a joint CEO. So she was sort of like under Stuart Machin.
Yeah.
She's going, so they trimmed the board down, and they've got a great guy called Richard Price there who does the clothing. He's got great back history, and you know, the ball's just great. Archie Norman and Stuart Machin, it's a good ball there, and they know what they're doing, and they're not over promising, I don't think. And on the current PE where they are, I think they're undervalued. You know, where they are now on a PE just about 10, which is
10, 11,
So they're, you know, and they're starting to pay a dividend again. Their debt's becoming, you know, far more investment worthy. So
run your winners.
So yeah. You know, you just can't, you know, when somebody's going that well, I don't normally get involved in great big stocks like FTSE 100s. I can't remember last time I had two FTSE 100s in my portfolio. Yeah. It feels really alien, but they're behaving like a small cap. So when you do that, it's quite easy to sit there. And the great thing is about Marks and Spencer's, you know, we shop in there. You can go in there and see what's going on. You know, like some of the stuff, they're just doing a food mashup now, chicken tikka masala pasta. And so they've started these food mashups. And they do these things, and, you know, they've got a program coming out at the end of the year where they're doing a, it's like a, for apprentices, a clothing apprentices, and they're going to have like a, it's going to be like a, what they call it, it's not the apprentice, but it's going to be like Britain's Got Talent.
Oh, and they've got to go, okay. That'd be a great idea.
These staff are going to have these youngsters coming in who are trainee clothing apprentices, and they're going to come up with their designs, and they're going to go through it six part series. And gradually, people get knocked out, and one gets a place in Marks and Spencer's at the end of it.
Wow.
6 1-hour shows on in October, telling everybody how great Marks and Spencer's is. Fantastic advertising for what's probably not costing them a lot. I should imagine they're contributing a bit to this show to get a bit of TV placement or whatever. But it's all little bits and pieces like that they do now. As you said, there's talk of like Tesco's and Sainsbury's got rid of their credit card, didn't they? But they're talk of Marks and Spencer's having a super app they're having, developing with someone and keeping in with NatWest and boosting this card into an app, and it's going to be something special. So, you know, there's all these little things there that you're waiting to hear, and they should have a trading update, I reckon.
Yeah, fairly soon.
The results are not for about 6 weeks, but I reckon they're probably going to have a little trading update before, just to say they're in line or they're ahead. But
yeah. What about Rolls Royce? Because that's another rocket ship you've enjoyed. Are you still in there, did you say?
Yeah, I got a little few less than I did have with Rolls Royce.
Yeah.
But the...
That's just gone vertical, hasn't it? I mean, it's like one of its engines.
It's amazing, you know, like so for it, you know, Turbo 2 fan they call him, and he's got in there and he's shaking the place up completely. I look back at the forecast from a year ago, and they're actually doing double now what they were forecast to do a year ago as far as earnings goes. Their debt's coming down fast. They're getting higher credit ratings, and you know. As much as you sort of think, oh, are they there? This is, you know, the pace at which they're improving is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And they're constantly, you know, Boeing's doing all it can to destroy the, you know, their own business themselves. So Airbus is likely to do a lot better. And Airbus is powered mainly by Rolls Royce. All the big long distance ones are Rolls Royce, you know, 340s and whatever. So, they've got their iron in the fire with these little small modular nuclear power stations that the government's trying to bring in as well. So, you know, there's always lots of stuff interesting about Rolls Royce. They've always got something on the go that comes up or gets spoken about, and good news flow, and it's keeping it in punters' faces at the moment. So, yeah, I think, you know, I just can't sell them here at that. You know, I did trim down, I bought a few back of those as well, because it's like FOMO. You're missing out. Why did I sell it? You know, you sit there and think, why did I sell so soon? So the few that I sold, I've nearly bought those back.
Quality problem. But it really underpins, doesn't it, or highlights and reinforces what you said right at the start, buying companies when everybody hates it. I mean, as you say, this was less than a pound. I think at some, you know, 70p.
I think it got down about 70p, didn't it, I think?
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, let's just... let's put it on to a
bigger. About where I bought them really just
there. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. It got down to 75p. Yeah, and it's now 4.14. So, yeah, I mean, when everybody hates it, the same with Marks and Spencers. And if you do that and then run them, and it's pricing in that risk, isn't it? So you've done that brilliantly. Anyway, could just remind everybody, if you want to put any sort of questions to Richard or myself, then just put them in, and I'll ask them away. We've got one who came in overnight, actually, asking about... because I understand you're a bit of an expert in all things electric vehicle. And I was asking about the transition to sort of like electric vehicles and what your latest thoughts are. Because in the States, actually, there has been a sort of like a bit of an air pocket in demand. It's moved more towards hybrids. Hybrids have gone up by 45% in Q1, whereas electric vehicles have decreased by 18%. They've only gone up by 8%. And I think deliveries of Teslas have actually gone down year on year, and largely about fears over pricing, because there seems to be a lot of deflation going on, so people are holding off buying, and also the secondhand value and the infrastructure. Can you give us your thoughts on that? Because that might then set up some opportunities in the sort of like, you know, the more traditional sort of like part suppliers and autos. But just top level, what your thoughts are.
I wouldn't say I'm an expert on electric vehicles for stocks, because, you know, but...
You don't like them, do you?
I don't like them. Common sense tells me that when everybody I know says to me it's a waste of time, and everybody I know that's got one have to come up with excuses as to why they're pleased about having it, and I know they're not pleased. You know, a friend of mine said that we went round a couple the other day, and he drives in from Somerset to London, and he said by the time he gets there, he's got to find somewhere to charge the vehicle. So you know, he leaves fully charged, gets to London, he's got to find somewhere to make sure he can get back. There's no charges around by where he is. You know, so he's got to get into work. So it takes him up time to go and get charged. And then he's got to, so he's leaving earlier. And in the end, he said it was better to drive from Somerset to Buckinghamshire, leave at his parents' house and charge it, and catch a train down from Buckinghamshire into London. And then he gets a train back up to his parents in Buckinghamshire evening, gets his car fully charged and drives back to Somerset. And that was never the plan. You know, the plan was to drive to London and drive back home again. And it's all these little things like charging points. And what do people do if you live on a 12-floor flat? How do you charge your electric vehicle outside? I have visions of these people linking together extension leads, 12 extension leads from the 12th floor, and reeling them all out and joining them all together like daisy chain them to get to their car. And it's other things like the range isn't as good as these companies tell you they are. You know, there was a survey and the range is about 10 or 12% on average lower than what the companies are telling you are, as they do. And then that's if you're driving it, that's if you're driving it normally and you've not got many people in it, you're not carrying anything. As soon as you add weight to it, or you've got people in there, it goes down. In the winter, the charging, the batteries don't hold as much charge as they do in the summer. So you've got the winter problem there. But I think as people are having, you know, some people have bought them, but I don't think, you know, I saw Porsche doing the two little small Porsches. They do the Cayman, is it, or the Cayenne, and the, I think it's the Boxster, the two little small ones. They're not going to do away with the petrol ones for the UK. They're doing away with them in all other countries, but they're not going to in the UK because people just aren't buying them.
Yeah.
They're not going to buy the electric ones.
Yeah. So if that's right, then obviously there could well be some opportunities in the more traditional sort of part suppliers. And one I'll just highlight too, investors. In fact, a company that I used to work with was the old GKN. It's called Dowlais. And let me just put the chart on it, because this is really significantly undervalued. I mean, as you can see, everybody hates it. It's classed as a sort of old traditional sort of like metal bashing business, but actually it's got about a third of the market in CV joints, which are basically the coupling and drive lines that go onto four-wheel drive cars. And it's moving into electric vehicles and hybrids in particular. It itself has got a third. I think Dana's got another third. And just to let people know, it trades at a PE ratio forecasts of 5.1. It's going to a stock buyback program. So yes, it's got a bit of debt, but it's got plenty of sort of like liquidity and cash. And I just think this looks totally mispriced in terms of, if you're looking for sort of like, you know, assuming that hybrids and the old internal combustion engines aren't dead and buried totally, then this seems to be a good play. And actually, it also does sort of like, you know, lots of other off-highway for tractors and trailers, and also powder met, which goes into sort of like, you know, normal car parts, but also lots of industrial applications, etc. So it's got a lot of strings to its bow. And as I say, I mean, it generates 7% EBIT margins, which is what you'd expect. But actually, it's looking to increase that to 10%. I don't know if you've ever looked at this, because it looks like, to me, maybe not quite as a sort of like a high quality business as Rolls-Royce, but everybody hates it. And it's got really strong positions with leading OEMs that it's built up for years that frankly nobody else can deliver, because it's got a global footprint that can actually service car platforms worldwide across Asia, the US, Europe, and obviously the UK.
I had a little look probably about when they were up around, I think they were up around £1.10, somewhere around there, and the market just didn't seem interested.
Yeah,
and so I took it off me. It's not been closed on my watch list just recently.
Yeah,
and because I've had basically there's been other stuff to chase, but it probably it's something that probably come back onto my my watch list again at some point soon, because you know all these things gradually get sold down, and I'd be looking for like I don't know if there's been any director. There's been any director buying there at all?
I don't know actually. I'd have to check.
So I tend to look at director buying and see whether you know how confident the directors are, and if they're not, confident, then you know I saw, especially when the stock's falling like that, you know you want to know why people have got such poor sentiment towards it.
Yeah.
I'd watch director changes if there's any director changes or anything goes on there at all.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them in, you know, there's a lot of them in that sort of sector. You know,
TI Fluid. Let's put that one up. I was just going to ask you about that because, you know, this is another one which has been totally beaten. It does basically fluid pipe work and fuel tanks into internal combustion engines, but is also sort of like, you know, does other applications. But it trades at a ridiculously low 6x or 6.4 times PE. And it got sold off artificially because I think one of the big investors, a private equity house, has decided to do a secondary placing at a lower price. But it just looks too cheap if you assume that essentially people won't just, you know, adopt electric vehicles straight away.
News, Apex Global Health LD, Director /PDM.
What was it? The I bought them because, like you say, they were cheap. And I looked at them and I just thought, you know, they're in a good position. What they actually do, they do the tubing that carries fluids through around cars. But instead of, we used to have like nylon or, you know, aluminium or copper tubing that it used to be. They do some sort of composite tubing, which is really light, really strong, and it's about 60% cheaper than using copper or aluminium. So, I thought, well, and with electric vehicles, they use 3x the amount of fluid, apparently. This is what I discovered when I was, really, you would think electric vehicle wouldn't need that much fluid, but apparently the electric vehicles use 3x the amount of fluid. So I did buy into them, but one thing that was bugging me was very little to no director buying at all. They got a new CEO, he's not been in there, and he hasn't bought any shares. And I watched their presentation, and I'd just like to see a bit of, you know, investor, you know, directors investing in the company and showing a bit of faith themselves, you know, have a bit of skin in the game. Yeah. So I did buy some, and then blow me, they had this secondary placing just after I'd bought them, and that knocked the shares for about 20%. They took a real wallop in the fall on the secondary placing. And I said to myself, at this point, directors need to buy some shares. If you're that cheap and then suddenly they go 20% cheaper, you want to see the directors step in and at least buy a few shares. Well, they never bought any shares at all. And to me, I just think to myself, that shows a complete lack of confidence in the guys that are running it. So I decided I'd made a wrong in there, and I took a loss and moved out. And I think I put some of the money across into one of the places it went into. I went into MPAC, which is the battery company. And I think as far as electric cars go, I think that's the one place where there is... They're doing a battery line for Freya up in Scandinavia, and to me that's a better place to be. You know, that's got the directors are buying. I watched the presentation there, and the CEO there looks good. The new CEO,
Adam Holland, isn't it?
Adam Holland, yeah, and he looks he sits there and he talks, and he talks from the sense. You know, they've gone out and they've found. They had a limited number of companies they were working for, and he's gone out and found a lot of new companies to start you know, selling to and asking them why aren't we selling to you, you know, and going out. And he mentioned a blue chip there, but he can't mention the name. So they've been finding some good new companies, I think. And, you know, I made money on the way up with these, and as they've come back down again, I've had a few punts in there, and I've made a bit of money a couple of times, lost money a few times. So that's how the last 3 years that has had a real beat up of confidence. But now they've got a new CEO in there. That's the sort of thing I like. Someone who's, you know, the old guy who was in there.
Tony Steele.
He was good. You know, I liked him. But I mean, these directors do get tired after a time. I don't know whether they get bored with what they're doing or... And when you can feel that they're starting, the business is performing tired, and they just come out with excuses, and suddenly the EBITDA goes up, but the EPS isn't growing, you know, and all these little things that just like stretch the way we're accounting, and the company comes to a point where you just need a new CEO or a complete new board, and I'm willing to back this guy. He looks right, and you know he's the forecasts don't include anything for this Freya battery line which they're developing. Yeah. And if that comes good, and it looks like it probably will, and it all runs, so they make basically packaging equipment for, you know, so they come in.
Yeah, it's high speed packaging and automation technology into factories. Their core business, as I understand it, is about 40%. Food and beverages, about 40% or 35% in the healthcare, and like blister packs and stuff like that, and pharma companies, etc. And then you've got 10%, which is other, and then you've got all of this clean energy Freya sort of business, which is all on top, isn't it?
Right. And you know, so it's literally pick up the goods, drop them in the box, fold the box in position, drop the goods in, fold the box up, put the wrap around it, put it on a pallet. So it does that. Their lines do a whole lot. And they're a world-leading company as far as packaging goes. Yeah. They've got some places out in the US. So they're a global company. And, you know, the forecast, it doesn't look expensive at all to me. It looks dirt cheap. Yeah. And it's a company I've always liked. I knew them since our Moldings, and which is quite local to us. And, you know, it's been one of those recovery play after recovery play there. Moulins was, you know, that got absolutely beaten down, and that was a great 20 years ago, fantastic recovery. And I think they've got a lot more in them, especially with the battery side of things coming along. And they're doing stuff with, is it Ilika?
Ilika, on the battery side.
So
as
they're
well,
on the battery side as well. So 10% of their business is, you know, and they're moving themselves more and more into batteries, which is great. You know, I don't like electric cars, but I'll sell batteries to people that do like them. And
a battery and a hybrid, that's for sure. And they're going like a train. So you haven't got to be just dependent on EVs.
Yeah,
I did notice, actually. I mean, they've got this target to do 10% top line organic growth plus 10% EBIT margin. If you run those numbers, you get to a share price well over £7.50. So there's plenty of upside if they can do that over a sort of 2 to 3 year period. And last year was just an absolute stellar performance, wasn't it? They've got a record order book to underpin this year's expectations, and margins increase. I did see on the EBIT margins that second half EBIT margins were 9% compared to first half of 4%. So actually, they're not that far off the 10% target already.
It looks, you know, so I think that's why it got bought up so quick. And of course, when it did bottom, this was the one time I didn't go in and buy them right at the bottom. I've been hit three times in a row by buying them and they didn't bounce. And then I thought this time, it took on a bit early, and I thought, oh, you know, I've not heard from them yet. And then once the news came out, I just thought, it looks right. More for me for not buying right at the bottom. But, you know, there you go.
I know. Another one which might pique your interest in that sort of, just on the industrial sort of car side, is Johnson Matthey. And this used to be an absolute darling about 10 years ago, because what it does basically, it's a world leader in catalytic converters. into sort of the automotive and cars and stuff and clean emissions. And they've basically got a huge market, you know, sort of like dominance in this across the world, to largely for sort of like, you know, turbos and exhaust pipes and stuff like that to take out sort of, it could be just industrial, you know, sort of diesel engines or just normal sort of like petrol engines. And the big concern, which hasn't really come out through yet, is obviously the transition to electric vehicles, whether they're going to need it. But actually, what's happening is that you're still going to need, obviously, catalytic converters for hybrids, because they still produce, you know, they've got petrol, et cetera. And also, you're going to need them for industrial applications. And, you know, basically, you also need them for the hydrogen if you go into sort of the electrolyzers and stuff like this. And again, this has been just sold off, because I personally think unless everything moves to, you know, gets electrified immediately, which it won't, this is just looks far too cheap. And it trades on around about 12 times, just over 12 and a half, about 12 and a half times PE. And it just sold its medical business as well for about $700 million, which gives it a big chunk of cash. It's going to do a stock buyback, etc. And it's got a really good, strong balance sheet. And I just think this is a nice, I don't own it, I just think it's a nice play that people should have a look at. Solid balance sheet. And I just think that it's mispriced. I don't know if you've ever had a look at this one at all.
No, to be honest, I used to look at them ages ago, because it's platinum that goes in the catalytic converters, yeah, isn't it? Which is like, and so it was a big platinum flower. I think that's where Johnson Matty started out, weren't it? It was all platinum. Yeah. And but on that chart you just showed me, there's a bit of a bowl there, and there's also a big spike in the volume. So that might be a good bottoming signal there on that chart when I just saw it. So I think that's probably... It might be worthwhile time now to, you know, if the UK is picking up now, then maybe it's a time to have a look at something like that. But I'm sure you're right. I'm sure that, you know, what happened, it's all about sentiment at a time. You know, everybody sells off, and even people that believe in the stock in the end, sometimes, you know, even I will do it with stocks. If everybody else has got bad sentiment you think they're wrong, you can't fight buck the trend, you can't buck the market. And while it's going there, often I will sell even if I think the market is completely wrong, because there's that many people that can be wrong, they drive the share down. And that's that's where you want to be buying, really, when sentiment has just gone so poor. And it's just on ill-found knowledge.
Yeah.
And that's when you get the great sort of rebounds in there. So, yeah, it's probably one I'll stick on my list as well.
Yeah. What about, I know you've had a look at, you've sort of taken your appetite to sandwich maker Greencore, haven't you, of late? Yeah. So what's sort of the interest in this one? Is it margin story? And sort of like, as people return to the office, they're going to get more convenience food and fresh deli stuff, and, you know, from shops and from coffee places and all this sort of stuff.
They sold off their US business about 6 years ago. And now when I look at them, you know, if you look back to about 2019, 2020, they were doing, I think they were doing about 13 pence a share EPS.
Yeah.
And that was on sales that was less than they're doing now. They've got 50 million less shares than they had back then.
Oh, right.
Yeah, yeah. Because they just bought back 50 million quid's worth of shares. So the shares that they had back then were... When they at 2019, I think they've got around about 50% less shares. So if you've got all those less shares, and they get their margins back to where they are, and the sales are probably 20% higher than they were back then as well, and they could do 13 pence there, there's the scope to do something like 17-18p or more EPS, I think, there. They've had activist investors come in, because they've got a new board. And his name is Dalton Phillips, I think it is.
Yeah, I've recognised that name from a lot of... He's got a good reputation, I think.
He came from Ireland, DAA, is it? The company?
Yeah.
He came from there, and he's just brought in the CFO from there as well, who he had working with him there, and he was singing her praises. And I think they've obviously, you know, gone and headhunted her as well. They've had activist investors. Oasis have got in there, and they've been complaining that the company hasn't paid a dividend like Premier Foods and Backover, the other two food companies that are floating around, and they've got worse balance sheets. The debt's gone down from, I think, but in 2019, their debt was about 500 million. It's now down to 300 million. I think, or just 200 million now, I think it is, their debt. So the debt's come down since then as well. So although interest rates have gone up, you know, the debt's down, and the Oasis have been saying, well, you haven't been paying a dividend. We're unhappy about that. Oasis, I think, were involved in restaurant group, Wagamama, when that got taken over.
Right.
And they were agitators, activist investors then, and agitated. And then a little while afterwards, restaurant group were taken over. So I'm sort of wondering, they're in there agitating at the moment. There was a bowl on the chart, and just recently, the thing's taken off. I noticed today, even with the market down, they're up again today, 4 days in a row.
Yeah.
So there's talk about them sort of like pushing to get the company either taken over. But I think that, you know, directors just recently, I think in February, were buying loads. They all bought about 40 or 50,000 shares each, about four of them, from December to February. So that adds a bit of confidence to me. You've got a new board in there. And he's talking, he's gone through it, they've got rid of 250 staff so that, you know, to increase margins on that basis, a lot of cost saving. And I think the share probably is taken off because people have realised actually that the company is actually in a good place. I don't think it's anything to do with a takeover. Mm-hmm. I think someone's realised that there's a good recovery coming on there. And if they do, like I say, you know, get their margins back up and their sales are higher, you can see them back up to where they were trading once before, which is there's a one bag of potential there. Yeah. So, you know, it just depends how quick the market gets excited and how fast this market comes back again in general. And but I think it's got one bag of status. I bought them beginning of the week. End of last week I bought my first lot. So I'm in last week, and it was just making a little bit of bowl. Since then, it's gone up vertical. It's up 20% this week over last week, which was cracking timing. But the bowl sort of said it, so you know.
It means you've had a good start to April. I mean, I would agree with you. Just looking at the numbers, I mean, it makes up for like about 4.5% EBIT margins, and it's forecast to do just about 9.5p of EPS. But if you can get to that 18, as you say, you stick a modest sort of like, you know, 12, 13 times PE multiple on it, then I mean, you're getting basically, yeah, £2.50, no problems at all. So, I'm with you. I think that looks, it's a lot of self-help, isn't it? And presumably, they've got a lot of people who prepare these, you know, the chilled dishes and the sandwiches. But actually, over time, some of that can be mechanized out and use robots. Because if they can fix me an omelette, they can certainly do a sandwich. That's for a nice bacon butty.
Yeah, it's not only just sandwiches they're doing. You know, like Marks and Spencer's are doing this sort of like fusion food now. They've got a chicken tikka masala pasta and stuff like that. I don't know whether that's been done by Green Corps, but they do a lot of stuff like that as well, soups and other stuff, and it can expand their range, and there's plenty of scope. And also, people, you know, living wage is going up £1 an hour. People can have a bit more money in their pocket, you know, and the national insurance is going down. A lot of people have been taking sandwiches to work with them and stuff like that to try and watch things, but gradually it creeps back in again. You say to yourself, oh, I'll pop out the Marks and get myself a sandwich or whatever, and they do what, 2 million sandwiches a day, which is that's a lot of sandwiches. So
and also the office culture is actually coming back. You can just see that through the travel metrics going into London, because a lot of employers now are just saying, actually, we need you in there for creativity, for teamwork, and just for sort of like idea creation and stuff. So you're going to get more and more people heading into the cities, going, you know, not being able to do your work from home, and therefore, you know, it's got to be good for all the delis, coffee shops, and people who eat Green Corps chilled stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. What about another one that I mentioned you quite like is Journeo, isn't it? Which is basically it does sort of transport systems, does sort of like, you know, arrivals for buses and trains and stuff like that. But it just recently did a run under contract, which was quite interesting, to convert Arriva buses. Red buses in London for their mirrors into on with cameras for safety purposes, which makes total sense for cyclists, because you think
one eye on the back of the head when you're driving along. So it's not good. That's what happened to James Cracknell, weren't it? You know, he had
that's
the,
yes, it was. Yeah, in the States,
a wing mirror caught him and made him really seriously ill. So they are a bit dangerous, wing mirrors hanging out. But yeah, they do the software and the hardware for all these signs when you see them up in the street at a bus stop or something like that, and it tells you a bus will be along in 3 minutes' time, and it's accurate because it's all done by, you know, sat nav or whatever they use to track these vehicles. And so, you know, they're winning contract after contract after contract. And I think if, you know, Sadiq Khan's going to start converting London into, you know, no-go areas more or less, and they're going to end up, you know, charging people per mile, it's going to mean more buses in towns, and they're going to need to be timed perfectly for the traffic. You know, the more you can time them for people that are waiting, and the more you can make things run smoothly, the less traffic there is on the road and the less hold-ups, and it's the way everything's going. And that they keep winning contract after contract. Directors have just been buying a lot more shares. I never got to see them down at Mellow. I was down at Mellow doing a thing with Andy Brough on stage, and at the same time, they were presenting, so I didn't get to see them, but
I met them actually then. I was in your presentation, but actually spoke to Russ Singleton, the CEO, who used to be the CEO of Synetics as well. I spoke to him and his team afterwards at the stand, and I was very impressed because they're trying to move into more recurring revenue stream software.
Yeah, and I watched their presentation recently, the results presentation, and they look like a nice company. You know, they look genuine. You know, the guys were talking, they're still in the growth phase, they said. I think Downing's have been selling out, so I think they've hit the share price. I think there's somebody else selling out at the moment, and it's quite a small stock. I think it's only about 7 million shares, something like that. So it doesn't take much to, you know, clonk them. But on the chart there, that's still a bit of a curve bowl right at the end there. It's just sort of formed, and it's got back down to the base of that sort of curve, and I won't be surprised if there's another nice bounce up after the once we get out of this financial year and everyone's done their CGT selling and stuff like that, and we've got all that out of the way. And I saw someone posted a chart to me yesterday. Small cap investment funds have seen their first inflows this month in March. So it's been outflows. It was Morningstar posted this chart. And it's the first month they've had actual inflows in March. So I sort of think small caps are probably, you know, you might have to start selling me Marks and Spencers and Rolls Royce down if these small caps start getting exciting. There's stuff like, you know, Lion Trust, which is quite handy, and some of these others as well, that, you know, all of them, to be honest, if you start getting inflows, then some of these investment companies are going to be seeing some double bubble, really, because they gain on the gain, and they gain on the, you know, the narrowing of the margins on them. So
Well, I hope you're right. My portfolio in Q1 hasn't done too well. It's basically just been flat to down. So and we're well due a re-rating in all small cap land, no doubt about it. Another one in the sort of like the fallen angel bucket that I'll just highlight to investors. I don't own, but is certainly something to keep an eye on, is Treat, which basically does all natural flavors and fragrances, largely for drinks. It's heartland for teas and coffees and fizzy drinks and stuff like that. And it goes into foodstuffs as well, but it's mainly into sort of the beverages sector. And look at that. It was rated at sort of like, you know, around about £12. It's down to £4. And what's actually happened is that there's been, you know, not great sort of execution on, you know, on the business. It hasn't grown as fast as, you know, it should do. And also, as people have started to go out more, they haven't had the sort of, like, you know, buying stuff at the just for the homes, you know, for drinks sort of at home and stuff. But this looks to me as being a real sort of like, you know, a fallen angel. It trades at, I know it trades at about 17 times P, which artificially does look expensive, but the margins are only 13%. And this one, for a really high quality niche flavors and fragrances business, should be sort of like rare over 20%. And that's what its major competitors do. And I know it's a family owned, but I would not be surprised if somebody puts a slider all over this, because it is really, you know, it's a unique asset that's been around for absolute sort of like centuries and stuff. And I think Lord John Lee,
Lord Lee
quite likes them actually
he
as well.
He was a big fan of this one, wasn't he? Yeah.
And look at that long 5-year chart. It just looks okay. It's reached that sort of like, you know, in the bottoming process.
Yeah.
And I just would not be surprised. This would be right up on my takeover list, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, it's in a good position on the chart there. When you get down to these old previous lows,
yeah,
you know, you've got a lot of people looking. I don't know why it is when it gets to old lows. Whether people sort of bought back there, sold out at the top, and then they think, well, I can buy back in what I originally bought again. Mm. You know, that sort of thing goes on in mind. But they're always good places to be looking when you see a rebound in a chart.
Yeah,
and I think they're based out over in East Anglia way somewhere, aren't they? I think over on Bury St Edmunds or around that way. And I know a couple of guys that were heavily into them, and they sold out near the top as well. Yeah. And I think it is a good company. Like you say, the only real bugbear is it's very liquid. Okay. When you're trying to buy them, you buy 1,000 and you move the share price, and it doesn't run on sets or anything, and so. If you're buying when there's no sellers around, you haven't got a chance. But yeah, it's a good time to buy when, probably now, if there's still some sellers about, yeah, probably be a time, good time to look at it. But I know you're saying that. Oh, they're having a fabulous time. I kept looking at them and thinking, God, they're on a PE of like 25, 26. I just can't buy these.
Yeah.
And they just kept going up. And then you suddenly realise why they're on a PE of 25, 26.
Yeah.
It becomes difficult to buy. So it's one of those, when you actually get in there, stick with it and just hold it. Because, you know, if you sell out, you'll never want to buy back in again. Yeah. And you'll probably miss out. So
yeah,
that's one that I probably would have a look at, actually, to be honest. Someone mentioned it to me only yesterday or the day before, and I meant to have a look, so I'm going to have another good look.
Okay, that's good. The last trading update, which knocked the shares down again a bit, was basically they said, look, we've seen destocking. However, what people didn't pick up on, lower down the RNS, they said they saw signs of that stabilizing to reversing the destocking in the second half. And nonetheless, even in a destocking environment, they were generating a lot of cash and were highly profitable. And I think the key nuts and bolts of it, as long as you're prepared to be patient, this one is going to turn. The ship is churning. And I'll just give an indication on the, you know, they've only got 10 million of net debt and they do 26 of EBITDA. So the balance sheet is absolutely, you know, pristine. Yeah. And they're just generating so much cash. So I really think that it's a 250 market cap. And you're right, unless you get a sort of like a liquidation of a investment trust like the Downing one, then you're probably not going to be able to pick it up. But in any size, anyway. But it's definitely something worth to watching.
Yeah, definitely. There's sort of things, you know, I've done a lot of in the past, and if the small caps are starting to rise again, then I'll be having a look at a lot more stuff like that. You know, that's going to be in there.
Yeah.
And destocking is a big thing, actually. You know, a lot of these companies. You know, I've heard them say, you can't believe how much stock some of these companies must have built up during COVID and how long it's taken to get rid of it. But I've got the feeling now, you know, even though it's been promised for about a year, 18 months, that all of the destocking's over, I think there's genuine signs now that a lot of these companies, the destocking is over or nearly over.
Yeah.
They'll start, you know, building up inventories again and... It'll be time for these companies to start moving up. I think that's what's happening, really.
Yeah. Well, I've got another one. I'll take you through on the destocking, which I think is going to turn at some point. But do that later. Let's go through CMC Markets, because this one has been a rocket ship, hasn't it? I don't know. Do you own this one? I know you quite like it, don't you? Yeah. Do you own it?
I bought that in January. I've one bagged it already. So it's.
Let me put the chart up. Just look at that.
Look at that.
Yeah,
that was fantastic. And right at the end of the year, they were just under a pound, and I saw them starting to turn.
Yeah,
and I think it was in November. It might have been November actually when I first pointed it out. I stuck it on Twitter actually. I saw the bowl and just pointed the bowl out, and then surprise, surprise! I didn't think the reaction would be that soon, but about 6 days later, they come out with a trading update. Wow, bomb! That was up about 20% in no time.
Yeah,
and then they came out with another update saying that they were going to cut 20 million in costs. Staff were being cut, and because it's operationally geared so much, you know, when they start, they wipe 20 million off their cost. That's going to start adding to, you know, the earnings far greater than that. So they came out and said that, and then they've just had another trading statement saying, actually, you know, we're going to be ahead of what we actually did say, and earnings are going to be better still. So it's got so much momentum behind it, and I think the EPS is going to rise much faster than people expect. And the directors have been buying shares there a bit, and it just looks... just looks one of those crackers that you're lucky if you get in the bottom. It's very liquid as well. So you try buying, and you know, a few people are buying at the same time, you just go and get looking. So every time there's been a little tiny pullback,
yeah,
bang, everyone's been in there and bought them, and up they've gone again. And I think that's probably the way to go, because it's way off its all time high still. Miles off its all time high.
Yeah. Give me a bit of gold and run there. In terms of when you made it, you doubled your money in 4 months. When would you start taking profits on that one, though, Richard? Because, you know, I mean, obviously it's now what, 250, 260, et cetera, or 230. But you're right. So you hit a top at during the pandemic, so when it was locked down at £5. And it's still got a lot of margin appreciation, self help, if it's going to get to the likes of IG and Plus 500 and people like that. So there's still lots of self help it can do. So, but how would you sort of like you view this in terms of top slicing?
I bought more on the way up as it's gone up as well. I bought,
well done.
I bought a fair bit on the dip. You're doing me down there actually, Paul. I one bagged them in 3 months, not 4.
Oh, sorry.
Well, the first lot I bought anyway. So, but yeah, it's the rest of them are starting to one bag now as it's going up that I bought. And I'll just ride that. You know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, if you one bag them, they've got a half before I'll give me money back now. So,
yeah,
well, I may as well just run them for a while and let it go, because when you've got momentum like that behind you, and the market seems to be, obviously, I think they're going to go back in the FTSE 250 in June. So yeah, that'll be another boost for them. Same as Greencore, they look like they'll probably hit the FTSE 250 in June as well. So right, there's a couple of shares there that's going to get a bit of momentum in June. And so hold on to them, because there's bound to be a lot of these mid-cap funds that are going to want to or going to have to buy them. So at least run until June or July before I start deciding to take profit in these ones. I don't know when, you know, Greencore, where that'll go. I think that's another one like this, to be honest. Yeah. I think that's going to be, so it won't take long, but we'll see.
Yeah, well, you've certainly done pretty well. Another one that is on that destocking that seems to have been hit, that was a bit of a fallen angel that I wanted to mention, is CML Microsystems. Yeah. And the reason why I mention this one, this is does sort of like, it's got a, it basically is a chip designer for industrial applications and defense. And so it's sort of like really tough and rugged and mission critical chips that it designs. It's fabulous, so it doesn't actually make its own chips itself, and it's been sold off largely because of sort of like destocking. We've had those problems obviously in the semiconductor area, but it's got to sort of like, you know, £3. It's got a, you know, a big, it's got a good solid balance sheet, 13 million market cap, and it's about market cap is 51 million, and it's got 30 million of cash. It's also got some land as well and a property which is worth over 10 million, and it trades currently roughly around about 17 times. But again, the margins are artificially depressed because of the destocking. But if you believe that actually, you know, there's going to be more requirement for, you know, things like aerospace, for 5G, for satellites, et cetera, which low orbit satellites, et cetera, then these are going to get sort of like designed into many applications that have sort of like, you know, useful lives of years, decades in certain instances. And again, it just looks as though it's a high quality UK asset, maybe fairly illiquid to get it in size, but pretty cheap, coming down from over £5 to what, just over £3, you know, recently. Have you ever had a look at this one at all? I'm guessing probably not, but...
Yeah, one bagged them in the tech booth. I think I more than one bagged them, maybe. One or two bagged them, because they were the secondary, one of the secondary shares to move. Mm. All the big techs were moving, and then these moved. They're in Essex, aren't they? So they've got a big load of land in Essex. I know that they were talking about selling off all. So there's always that dangling in the background. And yeah, I think the old problem is at the moment, all the electronic sector, it just seems to have a lot of stock around. If you look at sort of like Luceco, they've been saying that there's been loads of stock, and this XP Power is another one that's got in there, Gooch and Ausco, in this sort of bracket. And all of them, that's mainly on the back. I would imagine that they all start to sort of firm up roughly at the same sort of time as these. This stocking ends, and in the past when I've had them, I know that it's another one. It's quite liquid in it. I think they might make us deal about 1,000 shares. It's 1,000 shares to go, and it can be liquid. And you've got to put up with some bumpy moves there, but it'd be another one. Mark Slater was into this one quite a bit, I think, wasn't he?
He
had quite a big stake, and it's. He's one of those companies that always looks a solid, really solid company. But the chips seem to go in, it's very cyclical into using their chips. So, they'd be going fantastic, and you think they're going to the moon, and suddenly they'll come out and say, actually, the chips that we do are not in great demand at the moment. And then you go through this big up and down phase, but they're probably going to bottom around soon with all the electrical companies, I would think, like Luceco, and if they haven't bottomed already, so it's a sector I'm watching, but I'm not involved in at the moment until I'm sure that this destocking arc is all over. I think they're good, and the land that they've got there as well, I think is well worth watching as well. So I think you could develop on that out in Essex, where it's getting a bit more expensive out there. Being an Essex lad myself, I know what this land's like once these old guys get in there, start building it and getting them all on there. So, I do like CML.
CML, yeah. Well, okay, if anybody wants to, just remind everybody, if anyone wants to ask Richard or myself a question, then please just put them into the chart. Another one you quite like is, which has done really well, is the utility provider U Group for largely when power, electricity and gas, etc. Two small, medium-sized companies in the UK. And this one, frankly, has just been a rocket ship, hasn't it? I mean, it's just I don't know when you got in, but you've done pretty well out of it. Let me put the chart up. What's your latest on this one?
I bought them down at about £5 or £6, and they went up. I didn't hold them long enough. I only made a little tiny amount down there because I didn't understand. It was when we had Ukraine and the energy bills were going up, and all the utility companies were going to be making loads of money, and others were going bust. And I didn't understand how they would be affected by the actual price of the commodity itself. But I bought them and I lost faith, and I think I made 10 or 20%. Anyway, history was they went up to about a tenner, I think it was on there, wasn't it? Yeah, they got to that £10 mark. And then Toby were buying them back again. I didn't. Anyway, on the last results, I bought them again because I read the results, and it's just the broker forecast, they're going to have 138 million net cash next year, based on what that's the projection. Yeah. So, that was at £15 or what was it? It was, when the results were out, it was just about £14 or somewhere like that. Wasn't it? And at that price, half the market cap was in cash. I watched their presentation from the results. Bobby Kamara is his, I think his name, isn't he?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And because it's all business energy, so they've got none of this stuff with, private individuals. And they've got software now that watches to see when businesses are starting to struggle and they're not getting paid. And so they steam in quick and say to them, you know, we need to be paid, otherwise you're not going to have your energy or whatever they do to them.
Yeah.
And so they've got a good grip on what businesses are doing poorly and which ones are not. And they've just done a hedging deal with Shell. I don't understand the hedging deal myself or how it works, but all I know is energy prices are probably going to come down a bit, but I don't think it's going to come down to the point where they're only making 3 or 4p more next year than they are this year.
Yeah.
Just based on the cash they're going to have. Flipping 100 million, the interest rate on 100 million is going to be pretty decent on what they're going to have on the balance sheet, what they're going to do with that as well. Mm. And the pace of growth still sounds like it could be really sort of quite something stunning when you listen to the way they're talking.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just think it's a good place to be, but I will be a little bit careful because trying to understand these companies aren't that easy.
Mm.
And it's a small, illiquid AIM stock.
Yeah.
And you've got to always be a little bit wary when, you know, with things like that. And the industry is in, it's hard for me to understand it very well.
Mm.
So I wouldn't have a busting lot amount in it, but I've got a decent amount that's, you know, wouldn't be hurtful if I lost a lot. But I think there's probably a lot more in them. I noticed today they went down about 30 pence and then suddenly they were up 10p on a day like today. So you think there's a lot of people in there waiting to buy the dip.
Yeah.
And that gives me a clue there. But, yeah, with all that cash, I can't see why the risk is too great other than something disastrous happening again in the energy sector that they're not hedged for.
Yeah.
And
I mean, you're right. I mean, they still trade, even after the shares done really well, they still only trade on a 10 times P, which, given the sort of like, you know, the way that industry works, is probably they're never going to get a 50 times PE. It's going to always be a relatively low. Just on that, the agreement with Shell, I don't know the ins and outs of it, which they've got to, because they haven't probably disclosed it. But typically the way it works is that Shell has got a huge energy trading division and acts as a counterparty for you group to and its other customers to effectively buy forward. And what it does, it helps them manage the collateral. So it gives the Shell balance sheet, you know, they'll take some of the collateral that you need to put on because they've got such a huge, you know, the lower cost of capital, lower cost of debt and spare cash, and therefore saves you putting all their cash into it and having a higher interest rate and being less variable. So that's how it sort of like works. It's a sort of like a symbiotic relationship between. The only problem you get is clearly if you hedge and then you have to change the pricing. If there's some reason that you hedge and you have to then actually have to lodge a shed load of collateral because it actually moves, even though you say got your sales prices right, then you have to find a bit of cash. So that's the rub of that industry when you hedge forward.
Yeah, well, the thing is as well that they do. They also do these smart. They're going big on smart meters, and he's talking about getting to. I think they're down around. I can't remember what the last figure was. Like about 16,000 smart meters they were doing, and they're talking about getting to 100,000 smart meters in double quick time.
Yeah,
that's what their target is, and that's all for industry as well. So, and they're making good money out of these smart meters, however they do it. You know, the ins and outs of it, I'm not exactly sure how. But I presume you can watch the industry really carefully. If you can get one of the smart meter as well, you can watch exactly what they're spending, exactly, you know, how stretched they are and what they're doing. And it's handy for the business to have those smart meters in there, but also making money out of them as well. So, and all I know is when he said about this hedging deal, the comment was it would be transformational.
Yeah.
Well, you know, from where they are, you know, if something's going to transform them from where they are. And the great thing is none of the directors have sold any shares.
Mm.
You know, I look at that and I think, you know, if a lot of these dodgy little AIM companies, you know, straight away they get there and they pump the share up to high heaven, and then suddenly the directors all dumped a load of shares, and then 6 months later or 9 months down the line, they're telling you things aren't so good.
Mm.
Now, these guys haven't sold it one share from when they floated.
Yeah.
And I think that's quite a testament, really, that they're not in there just to pump and dump. They're in there to make some serious money. But Bobby Kamara's got over 50%. So I think the problem there is, and I think they're trying to address that, you know, that hopefully you're going to get a couple of funds come in and take 5% off him or 10% off him and reduce his stake. Because there's always that fear when someone's got that sort of stake that, you know, they're going to come in and take it private or do something something less than scrupulous. And that's probably keeps the PE down as well. But, you know, if he can satisfy a few investors that want to take a decent stake and reduce his stake and lower that fear, then, you know, the PE rating might rise a bit more.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And the transformational nature is that of that Shell deal is that it releases some of the cash. So let's just say, for instance, it does get to over 100 million of cash, you know, by the end of the year, then because Shell is going to do some of the heavy lifting on the balance sheet, some of that could come through. And they've got like 17 million shares, okay? They're currently forecast to do a 40p dividend. Well, let's just assume they do an extra £1 dividend onto it. That's only 17 million quid. And if they have over 100 million of cash, I mean, they could do a shed. They could do 5 quid if they wanted to. If they're going to generate 100 million, and that would be transformational on a £19 or £18 stock.
Exactly. And I said, you know, when I bought it, I sort of thought with half the market cap in cash and they're trading on that sort of PE, they are cheap. You know, they just are cheap. So it's that, you know, not being able to understand them as great as I'd like to is the one thing that stops me from, and the fact they're a little bit illiquid, but it's not so bad now. Now it's sort of price and you can buy 2,000 or 3,000 quite easily.
Yeah.
And it's not such a big issue now, but when I was smaller, it was, but
Good. Okay. One I'd like to highlight to investors that is, again, another one which is sort of like a bit of a baby in the bathwater stuff, but is a bit of a, it's a bit more risk associated. It's Tribal Group, which is an expert in all things sort of educational systems. About 75% of the business is a software platform that goes into universities and higher educations and does all of their sort of like, you know, management of their lectures and activities for students and room bookings and all this sort of stuff. And it's a recurring revenue model. It generates roughly around about 35% EBIT margins. It's had a huge problem doing a one-off implementation out in Singapore at the university there that didn't go well. And unfortunately, it's ended up into what they're doing now is mediation with the university out there. And if they can't resolve that, then it's going to go to litigation. The university is looking for $10 million compensation that the company flatly refuses. We'll find out the outcome of that mediation program sort of like by the end of June, I think, is the exercise. And if it doesn't come as a satisfactory, as I say, that will probably go to litigation. So I'll wait and see. Now, the reason why this is really interesting is it's got a large shareholder who's also an education ed tech software supplier out in the States, I think, with about 20%. And then separately, about 4 or 5 months ago, it got more than that, actually, you can see it. It got a bid, cash bid, all cash bid at 74p a share. And the big shareholder rejected that offer, saying it was undervalued, and therefore the shares have corrected. And it's trading at about 47p at the moment. Singers reckon it's worth about 80p, and I can easily see that, you know, in terms of what was being offered and the actual business. And it generates lots of cash. I mean, it isn't just a software platform. It all does about, say, a third of the business, I think, is also in sort of like education services. It sort of does inspectors for Ofsted at schools and this sort of stuff. So that's, again, a sort of like a, you know, 10% plus EBIT type of margin business. But it generates cash. It's profitable. It just got a bit of a, unfortunately, because of this litigation, it's got sort of 7 million of net debt on the balance sheet, which compares to 13 million of EBITDA. But if you added on a worst case 10 million, then it'd start to getting a bit sort of stretched, which is where people have sort of like got, you know, been shaken out. It's got really interesting shareholders, the likes of Harwood and some other, you know, some other very good sort of like smart investors. My instinct on this one is such that as long as it's not an awful result and worse than anything anybody expects for the single, but they're going to get through this. And once they have, then it's going to be a fight between the bidder who came in before and the existing shareholder about what price this gets taken out. I don't know if you've ever had a look at this. It's a special situation.
Yeah, it's a special situation. And sort of, I've traded them in the past, Tribal. They used to get tipped. Mm. I don't know who the tip sheet was. So it might have been Small Company Share Watch or someone. They used to get tipped quite a lot. And I've traded them on the momentum. But it's an area that I really sort of like don't usually get involved in education and stuff like that. It's not it's too what the competition's like and what they're actually doing. I find it difficult to understand and just not straightforward enough for me to invest in. So I've always traded it, but yeah. I do know that it's always looked cheap. It's all to me. It's always looked cheap. And you sit on there, and I've sat there and I've traded them. Now, they've had some big ups and downs as well, you know, I think going back from what I can remember. Problem is, I always get this mixed up with Triad. Do you know the other one, Triad? The exhibition.
They're Chinese drug dealers, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, I think they might be doing that. I don't know what they were doing, Triad, but it used to be about three companies. All used to be the same. Triad, Tribal, and
right,
something
yeah,
else.
I don't remember them now.
And they all, you know, sort of, I used to get mixed up in my mind which company was what and which was doing which. So I think that confusion never, ever helped. Yeah. But I have watched these in the past, and I've traded them on momentum. But yeah. I really don't understand the business as far as, now when you get into doing exams and education, I don't know how they make their money and stuff like that. So I find it difficult. I prefer something where I can see a retailer buys at this, sells at that. Yeah. Straightforward. I know what I'm doing. I find it too complicated. I know it's not that complicated, but I just don't understand where all the money comes from each individual position in it. So I've always left it, but I've only ever traded it. And like you say, if the deal comes through on what you're saying there, then and it's not a disaster, then they probably are going up. Mm. And you've got the issues out of the way as well. With all these things, especially often it's not what actually happens, it's the things out of the way, the uncertainty's gone. Mm. And what a share wants is sort of like certainty, really. And people are probably, you know, thinking it's going to be this much or that much, but they can't invest because they just don't know.
Yeah.
Once it's done, even if it's a poor result, it's out of the way and you're probably at the bottom at that point. So,
Good.
Yeah, I can understand, you know, a lot of special situations are great places to be. If you remember, who was the company? Was it Avesco or something?
Yes.
Avesco, you had the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? You know, they had the rights to Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Was that what they called?
Oh, yeah, okay. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, Celador. And that was sat there, you know, and everyone was saying that's worth, you know, this, that, and the other if they win this legal battle.
Mm.
And they did win it, and it just went absolutely bananas. It went up, you know, sort of like 50-fold or whatever. And it's always that type of thing that sits there holding. You know, if you can say to yourself what the worst scenario is, and you can live with yourself holding it on the worst scenario, you're laughing.
Yeah.
And I think you're probably right. But if that gets sorted and it's sorted to better than what the worst scenario is, then it's probably on the up.
Well, we've got a couple of questions coming in. One for you here, Richard. It's talking about what's your latest on Avon protection, which I know we talked about it, 6 weeks ago or something? It does sort of like ballistic proof or bulletproof helmets. And I think it also does, you talked about these breathers, didn't you, underwater and stuff like that. What's your latest on this one? Let's put the chart up.
Well, yeah, they've just hit a recent high. So I think they're on something like an 18-month high, is it now that they're at? Where does it
Over £10, £70.
October, yeah. So, yeah, they're back up to that sort of high. You know, fantastic place to be because all I keep hearing on the television is all this dreadful stuff about wars and, you know, out in Israel and Ukraine. And this is a genuine defence company. You know, a lot of people are conscience-wise find it difficult to invest in, you know, sort of BA, British Aerospace or Babcock because they're making missiles as well as things to defend people. And they're probably taking lives. But Avon is a genuine defence business. It's helmets and gas masks and things for people to breathe underwater. So there's no offensive material in there to kill anybody, which makes them in a great great position at the moment in a sector which I think is red hot. Mm. You know, the amount that governments are going to have to start spending, if they're not doing it already, on defence, with Russia and, you know, Middle East and stuff like that all kicking off, they're all going to have to increase their defence spending one way or another. Mm. And I think Avon's right in there. I saw today their biggest shareholder has just increased from something like 18%, 14% to 15%, is it? They've just gone up.
Yeah.
And so, you know, their biggest in, you know, if you've only got 40% of them and you're buying another 1% now, you're probably pretty confident that they're going to do well. They've got a new board in there, which is Josh Slater. The directors have been buying between them. And they're down from 40 quid down to where they are now, 10, 11 quid nearly.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to play for. I think I bought in at about 7 quid. So I'm up just over 50% on those at the moment from about 6 months ago, I think it was.
Yeah.
And I think I've probably got a trading statement in next week or two. They used to have a trading statement around, say, the 4th of April. They used to have middle of April. They used to have a trading statement. They usually have. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether I don't think they had one last year when, because Josh Slater only just sort of like got in. So they didn't do a trading statement. But if they go back to what they used to do, then there could be a trading statement in the next week or two.
Yeah.
Which would be quite handy. And I sort of, the biggest shareholder buying more just before a trading statement's about to come out makes me think, you know, maybe it's going to be a good trading statement. It should be. I don't think it can be a bad trading statement, to be honest. From, they won a big order quite recently. They've been winning great orders. Margins are getting better and everything. If, you know, these guys, like the thing I told you before, he's from GKN and
Ultra
Electronics. They've both got taken over. I'm sure this is where Avon's going eventually. They're going to get taken over because they're a small defence business doing a lot of stuff out in the US.
Yeah.
And that's where all the defence companies are out there. They must be eyeing them up. And as soon as they start hearing a bit of, you know, better than expected news, I think maybe a bit will move in for them. But
I would agree. I mean, there's lots of consolidation and they seem to have some really good IPR. If they can get these size contracts with the US DOD against all the US competitors, hey, they've got something, because you don't pick these contracts up normally unless you're very good.
And they've got no dilution from that high as well. They've still got the same amount of shares they had as when they were at that high. So that's what I love, when you find a company that's been bombed out and there's been no dilution.
Yeah.
And that's great. You know, you sort of think, that's, you know, no one with that green call. When I looked at that the other day, you got less shares than they had 5 years ago. And you sort of think, blimey, that's even better. When you say it's been bombed out and you've got less shares than they had.
Yeah.
It's fantastic gearing to the upside when these things start to turn around. So,
Good. Okay. Well, we've got one final question. I think it's for me, actually. It's Bellascura, which is basically does oxygen portable concentrators. It, let me put the chart up here. Just as an update, it came up with a trading update earlier in the week. Unfortunately, it was negative. And what they're saying is that they've been delayed, unfortunately, by 4 to 5 months because of, they did a reverse cash shell acquisition of TMT business to get to release some cash. And unfortunately, it got delayed by the takeover panel in terms of, they just got totally stuffed in terms of so many takeovers having to process that got pushed out. Mm-hmm. And that meant the commercialization of their sort of like their portable oxygen concentrators got pushed to the right, and they're sort of like 4 or 5 months later. And that means that it's drained on cash, and they've also to the point of getting to become cash positive is now being pushed out by that same period. So it's sort of Q1, and they're looking for additional funding, credit, debt funding on their for their business for sort of some one-off costs, and they seem to be quite positive on that. But unfortunately, that not surprisingly hit the shares badly. It's just one of those things. You just got to give the company a bit of time, and my view anyway, you just got to give the company a bit of time. If it can, when it raises money, things will change. But it's got leading technology and it's got a lot of high IPR, and it can sell these portable oxygen. It's got all the orders. It just needs working capital and to get to that sort of operational, performance. So it's been a tough time for the actual business, but let's just wait and see. So that's all I would say on that one. Anyway, thanks very much, Richard, for your excellent insight. And
it's a pleasure.
and look forward in touching base again in a couple of months' time. And I'm guessing an Arsenal won last night, didn't they, or something, or two nights ago? So
you
were top of the table for a moment.
It's leapfrogging it all the time up there. I don't know, waiting for Liverpool to slip up. Someone needs to slip up there, I think. But it's quite exciting at the moment, and maybe they can do it. But I think it'd probably be, always a bridesmaid, never the bride lately. So.
Yeah, we'll have to be bite. You'll be biting your nails when we get to sort of like the end of the month and early May. That's for sure.
Yeah. I'm sure I will.
Anyway,
all right.
Thanks again. Cheers.
Thanks. Bye. Cheers. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.